Alright, so the numbers are rolling.
So, as we bid farewell
to the possibly the only reasonable Russian ruler of all time, and we get some blame for this. Because just 2 weeks ago...
Another one bites dust. 2 weeks? Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
It was 2 weeks ago we covered him, so I think we may be partially responsible for killing him. Just like we're partially responsible for them finding Shackleton's boat, because I think that was about 2 weeks also. And wasn't there one other one that we covered and they died immediately after?
Okay, we're going to do an episode about millionaires that just popped up out of nowhere.
Oh, man, that's...
Lottery winners.
We finally get to do Trump.
My anthem, that anthem always makes me feel like I'm on this Typhoon class sub with CN Canary running from the Russians and Hunt for Red October. I think it actually, the Soviet national anthem might be my favorite national anthem.
Really? Well, a lot of them
really
from the,
love it.
A lot of them from that Eastern Europe kind of part of the world are pretty dark, ominous.
Yeah, but
marches.
Like
it's not a big stretch to see Laibach do it,
right?
I mean,
right.
Really,
but like
Rammstein would fit right in here.
I don't know. There's just something about it. Like I hear it, and it's just like, wow, I'm in Red Square with
communist pride.
Yeah, with a crappy bathroom vodka hangover. You know,
Tyler, by your feet.
What's by my feet? What am I chasing?
You'll see. It's by your left foot.
I got a friend who's touring all the Iron Curtain countries, and he's like, everywhere he goes, he's like, they're all like, man, I wish the whole Soviet Union thing would come back. This sucks. And it's like, wow, bad attitude, people.
Well, a lot more borders to cross.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yep, a lot more places to get shot. Crossing a border.
That's true. Both of those are true.
No reason to cross border. You can't leave.
This is also true. Like, you don't take tourists to Russia anymore. You don't just don't do that.
No, it's like places like Croatia and all that kind of.
Yeah,
like
you
Bulgaria.
Can go there and get out and come back, right?
No, all those jokers, they all want to go back to be Soviet satellite states. And it's just like.
I don't know. I mean, Ukraine's making a good fucking run of
every,
it.
Every,
Georgia's been around for a number of
every one
years.
Of them he talks to, is they want to go back.
It's why?
Like, I think they had their basic needs covered,
huh.
And now they kind of don't.
So it's
something.
Even worse.
How many people do you know that would jump ship right now to go live in Norway and get that health care, you know?
Well, you don't have to go to Norway. You drive to Canada to get health care.
Well, grass is always greener. That's basically the way it is.
But American health care system, we can all agree, is probably one of the most fucked up around. We are doing a really good job at not doing that well.
Yeah, and...
It's the only system we got.
Yeah. Of course the game's rigged. You still can't win if you don't play.
And yet everybody who, like, pops their head up and says, like, I got a good idea of how to fix this. It's like, no. No, I don't trust you.
Right?
No, it sucks, but I want to keep the suck we've got.
It's a known quantity.
Because you're
It is a known suck.
You're going to suck it up more, buddy. I can tell. It's just like, I don't know what you would have to do to prove it to me that, like, you know,
you'd have to
this.
Make it for a couple of years with a new single-payer system that was really a failure, and then they'd have to get it, you know, maybe a decade until it gets in line, falls in place. Because remember back, it used to be that way in Canada when they first moved to single-payer system, and everybody's like, healthcare's fucking horrible, there's no doctors, you can't anything, and now they've pretty much got it under control. It took them 10 years, get it run in, now it's pretty smooth. You can
if you were to ask my aunt or uncle that, they probably would have a very different opinion.
Really?
Yeah.
They've
lived in Canada all their lives.
Just do a demonstration project. Get a railroad built somewhere. You know, do that LA to San Francisco railroad, and bring it in on time and on budget. That's really simple compared to redoing the healthcare system. Do that, then I'll trust you. How about that? Something real simple. How about you just build one overpass?
Anywhere
in the country. On time, one bridge. Just do that.
And make sure the bridge is still standing later.
Just do
that. The reason you can't do that is the cement mafia, right?
Yeah, the big cement mafia in Eugene, Oregon. Yeah.
I think it all falls back to just that if the person wants the damn job, they probably aren't qualified to have it.
I not a damn.
Especially true in politics.
I wouldn't let a damn one of them put a Band-Aid on me.
Nope.
I really wouldn't.
Well, they got shakier hands than I do after not drinking for 4 days.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Hell no.
They have an excuse. They're bigger alcoholics than you.
They are.
Yeah, they must be drinking if they want that damn job.
Oh, my God. And they're all 95 fucking years old.
Oh, God.
So bad. Yeah, this is depressing. Let's go forward. Can we go
Gorby's
on?
Out at 91. How old is he? You know, yeah. Like, come on, people.
Jesus, like Pelosi's in her 80s, late 80s, right?
Oh, with the fucking Jack in the Box eyebrows. God. I don't know what's going on with that woman's face.
So bad. But, all right, again, let's get out of this depressing asshole. Let's talk about something else. Ladies and gentlemen,
no
and
more
everyone,
hey Mickey.
You're so fine. Well, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else listening, we are Ruined Heroes, a weekly free and self-produced podcast wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a guy who may not know when I was born. John.
I couldn't hear you.
And Rupert.
What?
You got that one for you. Nicely done. Huh?
What?
What?
I don't know. Is this what we're doing? This is like the most lackadaisical show introductions. I shot my wad bringing up the Soviet anthem. At least I put that in. No.
Please subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It's free for you. It helps us with exposure and algorithms and crap, computery stuff. To interact with us, we are ruinedheroespod@gmail.com, as well as easily found on Facebook and Twitter, where you get weekly hints. Say hi, take guesses. Get back on the guesses, guys. You've been slacking lately. I haven't been making them particularly hard either. Get on.
Can't hear you.
Huh?
Screaming into a vacuum. If you would like to get extra content and help with the cost of the show, you can subscribe at patreon.com/ruinedheroes and get in starting at just $1 a month. There are upper tiers as well. There's links in the show notes as well as on our website, ruinedheroes.com. Thank you to those of you who do give. We appreciate it.
Rock on with your bad selves.
Goodbye, Mr. Gorbachev.
Thank you for surprising us.
A intro. This one was said by the topic, so I can't tell you who it was. I'm not very well satisfied with the work I have thus far done. From this day on, I shall take a new way.
Well, I noticed the virtue signal bell is prominently out.
That's because I found it.
Oh, okay.
We threw it in the cat box.
Okay.
Not that cat box, that cat box.
I should put it in that cat box.
We probably won't need it this episode.
No.
Okay, I don't know. Pablo Picasso.
No, but you're not terribly far off. At least you're in the arts.
Okay.
This is said by a guy named Count Waldstein, or Waldstein, depending.
Is it E-I-N?
E-I-N.
Ein.
Okay. Mozart's genius mourns and weeps over the death of his disciple. It found refuge, but no release, with an inexhaustible Haydn. Through him, now, it seeks to unite with another. By means of assiduous labor, you will receive the spirit of Mozart from the hands of Haydn. To this person.
Wait, so is he saying this person is Mozart's disciple?
It's the one that's receiving it from Haydn.
Oh.
Haydn got it from Mozart. Haydn gives it to this guy.
Oh. Everybody's got the fever, huh? Hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this next one is a line from an extremely famous letter written by the topic. My heart is full of so many things to say to you. Ah, there are moments when I feel that speech amounts to nothing at all. Cheer up. Remain my true, my only love. My all as I am yours.
I don't know, Beethoven.
Yes!
Okay.
Because the next one was the introduction to that letter, which is, to you, my immortal beloved. And if you hadn't gotten it there, we would have had to have a talk. Because you're the one that listens to this shit all the time.
I used to listen to Beethoven. He's too choppy for me now.
I listen to a bunch while writing the notes. Downside is, when you put title on just play... Beethoven list, you get 87 versions of the Fifth Symphony. I was like, I can't with this again. No more Ode to Joy. What, like... Sources.
That's the thing, is like his greatest hits, like, you know, obviously, like you, I'm sort of done with them.
Yeah.
It's like,
I want some of the earlier, like, piano fugue work that he did, something like that, maybe. But no, it's the same things. The fifth, the ninth. Sources: classicfm.com, biography.com, itscaltech.edu, and liveabout.com. Born Ludwig van Beethoven, V-A-N, that will come into, that'll remember that, around December 16th, 1770, in Bonn, in the Electorate of Cologne, Principality of the Holy Roman Empire. Most people believe that the 16th is the best day to mark his birth, because Catholics at the time traditionally baptized the child the day after they were born, and there's baptism record for the 17th. So, and parents were devoutly Catholic. So, like, by that measure, they didn't really have a birth certificate, but by that measure, 16th is probably the best day.
Be baptized or be dead.
baptismal certificate counted as a birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when I was a kid, they would say that on forms.
Really?
Like, if you're applying for a passport or something.
Well, that's how Nazis... Yeah. That's how Nazis...
Like, seriously, that's...
That's how Nazis were getting out. They'd be rebaptized in Italy, and then the Red Cross would get them passports. Under that new baptismal name.
That's nice. Oh, I wonder if that sham still works. So there also comes a time in Beethoven's life when he demands that he was born in 1772 as opposed to 1770. He was shown the official baptism document saying he was baptized in 1770, and he still didn't believe him. So there's some mental stability issues that will come up. And this is during that time.
Well, he doesn't exactly have a Mr. Rogers face.
No. You know? Even the pictures of him when he was young, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, buddy. Dad, Johann van Beethoven, was a court singer and chapel master, as well as known for his alcoholism. And Grandpa was a well-known and very successful musician, also who our Beethoven was named after. So his grandpa's name, Ludwig. Mom, Maria Magdalena, was a homemaker, but was said to be very socially graceful and beautiful, and both pretty religious. Both parents being pretty religious, they raised their kids in the church life, having lost two of their five children to, you know, old-time kid death. Yeah.
To stuff.
They were also very doting parents. So, like, we're Catholic, we're on top of you, and
let's make sure this one lives.
Yeah. Yeah, they're paying more attention. Dad started teaching Beethoven piano as soon as he could reach the keys, which meant like three, and he immediately showed great promise. Being an authoritarian, there are stories of Dad hitting young Beethoven with a stick or a strap or a strop when he would play a wrong note or something out of order. He would force him to practice for hours on end. He would lock him in a closet and be just generally brutal in most other ways. And like,
build character.
The neighbors all reported, like, Dad was a fucking dick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it does build character, I suppose. So it was not a real easy life at the beginning for our young Ludwig. But Dad wanted him to become the next child prodigy a la Mozart. He was literally trying to make him become the next Mozart. Many believe this is the reason Beethoven detested child prodigies later in life.
Wow.
I can see a direct line.
Yeah, I'm just like wondering how that comes up other than by destroying a small child.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Why would you hate a child prodigy unless you were beat into being one?
Or unless you're like sitting there, somebody sends a kid over for piano lessons. And, like, you're like, ugh, I hate child prodigies. You're an asshole. You know? I don't know.
So, yeah, that was a thing. Like many other musicians' parents, Dad scheduled his first recital when Beethoven was only 7 years old, but sold it as, quote, little son of 6 years. So Dad straight up fucking lied. Dad's, like, giving notes to the colonel now. This recital was pretty well received, but did not make any papers, so they pressed on. And he's at this point in time, he's just playing already written music. He's, you know, he's fucking seven. He's not writing his own pieces yet. Coming soon. Attending a Latin school, Beethoven was a mediocre student at best. He struggled with math and spelling, and many believe he was at least a bit dyslexic, quite probably very dyslexic. Beethoven was quoted as saying, "Music comes to me more readily than words," and being dyslexic myself, I can attest to that. Like, y'all know I don't have a native language. It's because there isn't one when you can't read right.
I'm surprised you can pronounce Beethoven.
Me too. Me too. I'm surprised I can spell it. So, by the time he was 10, he had left standard schooling. So let's think about this. He's only got like a fifth grade education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the education he'll really ever have. Which is fine, I guess, if you're dyslexic and education's a fucking struggle bus anyway, right?
Go hook up with Tito.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Good call. He started to pursue music full-time under Christian Gottlob Neef, who is one of your hints. Or do you say E on the end of Neef? Neefy? N-E-E-F-E?
I think just Neef.
Just Neef sound. There's a lot of
E's. Not that I'm any expert, but...
A lot. Well, you're generally closer than I am.
I think Neef is right.
Neef was the new court organist for the city of Bonn. So they had, like, court-appointed musicians back in the day. It was like, if Eugene had a band that they named to perform for us, that's kind of what they were doing. And, I mean, apparently not a terrible living.
Well.
He had taken up violin in addition to the key instruments, so being piano and organ and those kind of things. He was becoming the prodigy his father wanted. So, like, he was working. By 10, we finally beat him into prodigy. We beat the smart into you. Nothing, guys? Really? So, performing came a mainstay in Beethoven's life, but he was starting to dabble in composition. And in 1782, so he's 12.
Yeah.
He released his first composition, a piano piece that was variations on a theme by a lesser-known composer, Dressler. People fucking loved it. So, 12, he's now writing his own musical compositions. And it is variations on a theme, so it is just kind of more of an arrangement.
Yeah, 9 variations on a march by Dressler.
Yeah. But still, like, 12. That's... I wasn't writing sappy fucking lyrics until I was 14 at least, right? That's pretty good. By 1784, when Beethoven was 14, his father's alcoholism had taken his ability to sing and ruined his reliability. So dad's too much of a drunk, his voice is now gone, and...
He can't show up.
Yeah, he's not on time because he's drinking too much. He could no longer support the family because of this, clearly, right? Not what you'd call a functional alcoholic, I guess.
Functional child beater.
Yes, he is. Yes,
he figured that one out just out of alcohol. You know? Here's the secret to beating your kids, folks. Drink a lot.
Yeah. Our Beethoven, appealed to the city of Bonn to become a paid assistant to the court organist, the guy he was studying under anyhow, and they said sure, so now he's getting paid. Beethoven started to support his mother and siblings and drunken father right then.
Oh, God.
Somehow he did this on an annual salary of 150 florins a year and supported the family. But, you know, I don't know where dad's getting the booze.
Bathtub gin.
Maybe. You know, stomping some grapes. Let them sit outside for a while. It'll eventually become something. Whether it's palatable or not, it's a whole different deal.
Well,
but.
Usually the degree of alcoholic you are means that the amount of flavor doesn't need to really exist.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Really good drunks buy really cheap booze.
Yeah.
Unless they're politicians, in which place... They have plenty of money, and they buy really expensive booze.
And then we buy them.
We buy them really expensive booze.
I got to get another good politician so I can go over and drink expensive booze. That would be nice.
Well, did you hear that, like, Oregon raised the minimum liquor price?
Minimum liquor price?
Yeah.
That's a thing?
That's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Get the fuck out.
No shit. Oh, well, so, like, on the bottom shelf... 175 bottles,
Yeah.
Of, like, Fleischmann's gin and stuff like that.
Yeah, the ones you could get for, like, $6.50
bucks. It's like $12 for a 175. Now it's $17.
Fuck. Well, CC has a mandated set price for all of their alcohols.
Isn't that just, like...
unbelievable to me.
It's just unbelievable to me. It's just, like, you guys are just...
they're just fucking with us.
Really bad people.
Well, and we're unique in Oregon because every liquor store is run by our fucking government. As opposed to, you know, like California, where any Tom, Dick, or Harry can get a liquor license and sell it.
Yeah, that's why we have very expensive hard liquor prices in Oregon. It's crazy.
It's because there's a minimum liquor.
There's a minimum.
That's some bullshit.
And the reason for raising it so dramatically was given as to keep those poor people from becoming alcoholics. And it's like, okay, well.
Do you honestly think that poor people aren't going to sit there and say, well, let's see here. I can afford booze now.
The decisions the excruciatingly rich make to try and protect poor people in this country.
From themselves, yeah. Well, they're protecting. No, God, no.
They're not trying it. They're just like, well, we want the revenue from being in the booze business, but we want to pretend that doesn't mean alcoholism. And it's like, dude, if you're in the booze business, you're in the alcoholism business. That's what you're in. You know, it's like selling heroin and saying, I don't want anybody to get addicted.
I don't
addicted.
Want any junkies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
right?
Like, it's just so ridiculous.
Oh, anyway. Ugh. Boy, just wait till there's a basket full of laughs.
Just wait till the minimum fucking price on weed.
You know, actually, that would help the market right now because prices are tanking. Just too much.
They're probably letting them do that for a reason. So that they can come in and set a mandatory price.
Well, and it's recreating the black market so they can get revenue from breaking shit apart and tearing shit up. So we can justify having more cops and officers and things like that. It's this fucking dumb, crazy cycle. Oh, my Lord. What do you need?
Yeah.
I don't think we needed that. It is a dumb fucking thing.
I still have the Soviet anthem queued up. Just saying.
So, sticking with Beethoven sticking with his new job for the next few years, he was sent by the Muckety Mucks in Bonn that were employing him to Vienna to study with the masters in 1787. He studied under Haydn and most likely Mozart. This engagement only lasted a few months. Some reports said weeks. So, I mean, but it's from the 1700s. I'm not going to worry about super accuracy. But he received news that his mother had gotten sick, and he returned home to take care of the family. He's 17 years old now, so he's now really taking care of the family because Dad's still fucking crazy. Mom died of TB a few months later, and Dad took to even more drinking time with the bottle. So, Dad's really a drunk. At least he doesn't have to feed. He's got one fewer mouth to feed, but he loved his mom. She wasn't the one who beat him into...
Man, a child-abusing German drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get any more cliche than that?
I think that's like... that's really the last thing you want to encounter. It really is like... Anybody else?
That's a bad dude. You're right. Yeah. Well, and heavily Catholic. Don't forget.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, what else? He was a Hell's Angel? I mean, I don't know. What else did he have going for him here?
Well, German and Irish. Yeah, I mean, if it was German and Irish.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Good point.
Strikes terror in my heart. It's new.
In 1790... the Roman Emperor Joseph II, which is one of your hints, died. Then 19-year-old Beethoven was asked to compose a piece in his honor. For unknown reasons, the piece was never performed, at least as a tribute to the dead ruler. Some think the young man didn't measure up to his tasks, or to the task. Others think some more prominent composer may have gotten the spot. Either way, more than 100 years later, Johannes Brahms, yes, that one, discovered a piece entitled Cantata to the Death of Emperor Joseph II. And it has since become considered one of his earliest musical accomplishments. So he did measure up to the task. Now, we still don't know why nobody performed it at that time. It does get performed now.
Well, I think he got over it, but I think that he might have had lingering problems with authority figures.
Well,
well, there is that, you know, distinct possibility.
There is that.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, later on we get to, like, the Third Symphony, and now he's writing an ode to Napoleon.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean the pastry. That doesn't mean the pastry.
Nope. Or the ice cream.
Yeah. That's Neapolitan.
Oh, you're right. Fuck.
Words.
I know.
They're such difficult things,
aren't they? Hard to chase down. So at this point, Beethoven petitioned the court to let him be the head of household, and they awarded him half of what his dad had been making to help him care for the kids and drunk dad. I don't know. Yes, same question I had.
Okay, what had his dad been making because he was an unemployed drunk?
Maybe he was getting a pension?
This sounds like Social Security or something.
Yeah, like drunk pension or some shit? I don't know.
I don't know, but if I were you, I'd start looking into it.
Yeah. There you go.
Not from the weed company. And not from my company. So, right? Yeah, we aren't socialist enough for getting... Nope, not going to happen. I think I just ruled that out. That's three no's in a row.
Well, shit.
Good idea, though. So he's now head of household, essentially. He remained in Bonn and helped the family out while remaining an organist until 1792. So he's 22.
Yep.
That's not bad. That's like a 5-year tenure as the organist, or at least the assistant organist, right?
That's pretty degrading, though. Like, you know, if you're the dad, and you're like, man, I became such a drunk that my musician's son is supporting the family.
Right.
And I have to give him
half of my... The government decided to do that.
Yeah.
The government is paying me half of his whatever penance.
Pretty degrading.
It is. But, I mean, enough time on the bottle, you can get rid of that worry.
Yeah, that's true.
You can drink that one right away pretty quick, I'm sure. One now higher priced 750 milliliter bottle. So, mid-year of 1792, he moved to Vienna again to study with Haydn again. His dad died in December that year, and he didn't get along with Haydn as well as he had hoped, so he moved to study with Johann Georg Albrechtsberger. Jesus, fuck, I hope I did that. Albrechtsberger, that's certainly what it looks like. Who was a well-known counterpoint teacher. This is when Beethoven took to composing hardcore. He studied under Salieri. If you're using movies to follow history like me, Salieri is one of the mentors of Mozart. And so he's picking up this kind of counterpoint that was popular at the time. He took to writing a lot of fugues in 3 or 4 parts, so again, popular at the time. He was becoming an established composer, and most considered this his first phase, or artistic writing. He was also becoming known as a virtuoso on the piano. He was a big shot, and only in his early 20s, he started hobnobbing with the nobility, and even changed the Van, V-A-N, in his name to V-O-N, which is honorific.
Oh.
Just because he's hanging out with the hoity-toities, I guess. And he did that. Nobody else did that for him. You guys really don't. Is it too hot for you guys or something?
So it's
getting there.
So it's sort of like just going by Morrissey.
Yeah.
Yeah. He made his own nickname, basically.
Yeah.
I'm going to call myself this.
Von Beethoven instead of Van Beethoven. Mm-hmm. Because, like Von was Lord or some shit like that.
Basically means I'm from. It's a lineage. It's like, ooh, I'm special.
Oh, from the line of Beethoven?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're not that special. Look at the lineage. Dad before you is not really great.
Yeah, so? How many people could actually probably say the same thing during that time? It's like, hey, my dad was a drunk.
Yeah, everybody.
Okay, I mean, it's not like they were setting up, they didn't need a whole lot of support groups. Drinking, everybody just knew it. It's like, yeah, dad was
crazy
drunk.
Crazy back then. Like, everybody was a drunk.
You couldn't drink the water because they were shitting and bathing in it.
Yeah.
So you had to, like...
So schnapps was a thing.
Yeah, ferment the stuff out of it so it was safer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cider in the U.S. Thank you, Johnny Appleseed.
I'd still just call him T-Bone.
So this is also when he started suffering from tinnitus in his early 20s. He would hide his hearing loss from those around him, especially the rich and famous he was now hanging around with. While alone at home, he would start to use those hearing helpers, you know, those long cones you see in all the pictures of him. And there's, I did find a picture of a collection that were actually his. There's like 7 or 8 different ones right there. But that's what he was using.
It's got to help your eardrum along. I mean, it really does. Stick this fucking thing in your
giant
ear.
Giant tin thing in your ear.
The horn, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, some of those things were like really elaborate. They were like decorative.
His kind were of kind of just standard tin, but that's because he was using them at home.
Yeah.
Not, you know, when he was out, he'd try and read lips or say, huh, a lot. goes over great at parties. You sound like an excellent conversationalist.
It's funny because I thought you got, I'm not sure if it's pronounced tinnitus or tinnitus, but whichever tinnitus. It is, I thought you got that from prolonged exposure to loud noises.
You
correct.
Do.
Correct.
I have it.
So how does he get it?
I don't know. Too much time in the organ? Organ was probably one of the loudest things around at that
time.
I think
organ, or well, maybe being if he, slapped, well, he, you know, he wasn't in the hit, military, yeah. right? He wasn't in the
military. Did not do military.
So yeah, he wasn't
It wasn't
firing
guns and bangs and stuff.
If you get cuffed in the ear enough times,
yeah.
the pressure there would do it.
So
yep.
Good old dad again.
Head trauma. Yeah. Dad beat the prodigy so into him and beat the ability to hear out of him, maybe.
That's probably what happened.
Well, that does come into play a little bit later. He does get another head injury, spoiler alert, and it does come into play, and it does affect his hearing. We'll get to it. But yeah, so maybe that, I think, beat into him more than noise. But, I mean, he's, 15 or 16 years, maybe even more of his life, he's standing in front of an organ for 10 hours a day or whatever. That's prolonged exposure to one of the loudest things they had around, short of gunfire. In 1800, Beethoven is said to have told his friend Wenzel Krumpholz. Great name, Krumpholz.
Let's just call him Kick Me.
Wenzel Krumpholz. I am not very well satisfied with the work I have done thus far. From this day on, I shall take a new way. So that's a quote from the beginning. So this is officially the end of his first phase. He's like, I'm done with the first phase. I'm done with doing fugues. And counterpoint and sounding like everybody else around me right now. He's like gonna break out, be an independent artist, you know, groundbreaking, alternative classical, if you will.
Well, no, he's born, you know, he's born within decades. He's born like what, in 1770 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he's born, you know, 20 years after the end of the Baroque period, which, you know, it's still going on at that point.
Right.
You know, that's still the thing. And so, you know, if he's sitting there doing fugues and all of that kind of thing, that's Baroque music.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what he's doing. The classical period, you know, sort of started, but like hasn't really started, you know?
Yes.
And so...
And he's heavily, to, like, historically, he's blamed for starting the classical period or being the first real.
He's the most notable classical composer there is, as opposed to, you know,
a Baroque,
composers or Romantic or any of that sort of stuff.
And we're splitting hairs a little bit. I mean, you can lump it all as classical music, but now we're breaking the genres down.
Well, no, classical music is the specific that's applied as.
It's like saying rock music as opposed to modern rock and classic
like
rock
I'll have
and
a Coke
folk
instead
rock.
Of a cola product of whatever other variety.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a blanket. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
And so yeah, the Baroque period is still going on, but he's like, I'm kind of fucking done with that. I'm going to move on. And so, this again, it was the beginning of his second phase and a new writing style, which was much more expressive, often referred to as romantic in style. His compositions during this time were much more complex, also because. I mean, like, a fugue is the same piece played over and over and over. I mean, think about Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And
that's what I was
going to
say.
That's kind of like what
a fugue
is.
Essentially a round.
Yeah.
You know.
It's different instruments playing it at different octaves in opposing places, and that's what a fugue is. So, I mean, like, it's not that hard to write. You write 16 bars, and you just mix them around a little bit. Like,
shake
them
I've
up. Written a fugue, for fuck's sake.
It's the boggle.
Yeah. But this new romantic expressive style is like lots more notes. There's a lot more complexity to it. You do have to write a whole measured piece, not just your 16 bars and shuffle them around. It is often called his heroic phase. So the second phase is called his heroic phase. And he moved well beyond the piano and into the symphony world. So he starts writing some symphonies, which that, talk about complex composition work. That's you're writing 70 pieces.
Yeah.
To make one cohesive whole. And you have to imagine all of that out. It's insane. It's
and so while losing your hearing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and hiding it from everybody.
Uh-huh.
Publishers started competing for the rights to his compositions, and he became much more prolific. Alas, he took a tumble and hit his head, which furthered his hearing loss. I don't know. I couldn't figure out how he took a tumble. It sounded like maybe down some Schnapps. Stairs. Well, he had started drinking. He was not nearly the heavy drinker that his dad was at this point, although it does come into play in his death. But yeah, he's losing his hearing more because he whacked his head on the ground instead of, you know, on dad's stick or whatever. This only seemed to strengthen his drive, however, as he would go on to write more during this time than any other period in his life. Because he wanted to hide his impairment from those around him, he retreated to his home more frequently, becoming extremely reclusive. This was not good for his mental health, and he fell into the first of his depressions of sorts. So yeah, he enters his first depression of sorts. I mean, they didn't know that word back then, but it's clearly what's going on. Part of it is because of his tinnitus and hearing loss. Part of it is because, you know, that great upbringing. And he's lonely. He's had a couple heartbreaks by now.
Oh, okay. I wasn't hearing about any chicks.
Yeah, it was very confusing, the time frame of the chicks. So until the Immortal Beloved, which was confusing itself, I didn't really include it. But yeah, he's had a few heartbreaks as well. And it sounds like incel-style heartbreaks, not like...
Nobody understands me.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody understands me. I am just... I'm this struggling artist.
And I fall in love understands with this beautiful countess, and she doesn't love me back.
And Von Beethoven didn't cut it.
Yeah, exactly. Faking it with changing one letter in your name. He didn't even capitalize it or nothing. He just, like, changed one letter and went on. So, but again, he's super prolific during this time because he's essentially locked away feeling mopey. And in 1802, he composed his piano sonata number 14, commonly known as the Moonlight Sonata. So even if you don't know anything about any kind of classical music, you have heard this song.
It's the most famous triplets in history.
Yep. And so 1802, he's what, 32 now? Right?
Yeah. What did we do at 32?
A lot of fucking drugs.
It's kind of funny because, like, Moonlight Sonata is kind of, you know, fugue-like in its structure.
It is. Because it's one of his earlier, you know, it's during his transfer phase. Because it was just 2 years earlier where he decided he wasn't going to do that fugue structure. So you do have some of that in it. But it is...
Once you think you're out, they pull you back.
Well, you start out with going with what you know and just taking small steps outside of it. And then you get more confident with those steps that you're taking, and pretty soon, you know, you don't go with what you know anymore.
Yeah, you don't become a bebop jazz musician at step one. You know, you got to learn to get out of the box, know all of your scales, right? So he's growing as an artist. This song cemented him as one of the greatest composers of the time. So at 32, he's like, clearly he's going to be one of the best. By 1806, he had composed 4 symphonies. So just 4 years. That's, like, most bands can't put out an album a year. And he's writing symphonies, as we discussed, the complexity. Because you got to write, you know, 4 or 5 violin parts, 4 or 5 cello parts, 4 or 5, and everything.
And you're doing this shit by hand.
Yeah.
You know, there is no, you know, you get into a mixing studio, and you're like, okay, well, I want to take that guitar riff that I did about 10 minutes in there, and I want to bring that back in. Okay, let's go ahead. Okay, that's cool. Hey, how about those drums? It's like, okay, boom, do that. Okay, let's lay those in.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're done.
There were these cool pictures of some of his work that I saw, because he would, you know, like, wake up in the night, or he'd be at a cafe or whatever, and he'd have an idea, and he'd scribble stuff down. And it literally, it's like a 16th note bridge and a couple quarter notes and then a bunch of scribbles, and how he ever made sense of that when he got home. Not to mention, like, hearing it in his head and putting it on paper.
Well, you've read your own handwriting, right?
Barely.
Okay. Well, that's essentially what it is. I mean, it may look like chicken scrawl to you, but...
It would look like musician shorthand, kind of. But it was they're cool pictures. You can dig them up if you're into it, if you think about it, folks. And it was kind of neat. So yeah, this Four Symphony thing was just out of this world. Nobody could do it. The third one was originally called Frank Bonaparte.
Well, he was always running around saying, "I've got all these symphonies written, and I can't get people to perform them."
It's because they're in 12/6 time and shit.
It's because you suck, okay? You suck.
Or when they really do fucked up shit, when you do it like in 12/9s, you've got more counts in a measure than you're supposed to have, and it's oh my god, Zappa. So anyhow, his third symphony during this period, which Rupert brought up earlier, was originally called Bonaparte, and was attributed to Napoleon. Currently, it's known as Eroica.
Eroica.
Eroica. See, this is when you can pronounce things better than me. Thank you for the help.
Well, it's not like that's a fluke.
I
that's like...
You graduated college. So, yeah, it wasn't cool to call it Napoleon anymore, I guess. That's why they changed the name. Because Napoleon went through a phase where it wasn't cool to be Napoleon.
Yeah, I couldn't find the ice cream.
Well, you got all those wars going on. Mm-hmm. So that could have been a factor.
It was definitely a factor. But this is, again, where he kind of switched his opinions on people and started writing for big guys, big authoritarian figures.
Yeah, well, he wants to get paid.
Fair. I don't think he wrote it for, like, Napoleon. I think he wrote it and he's a commissioned musician or commissioned composer.
Yeah, he gets it paid.
Well, I think he was trying to capture... You know, because if you listen to that symphony, I kind of personally, it's my favorite. But if you listen to it, it's capturing the grandeur of what Napoleon was trying to do. You know, in his mind,
take over all of Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
Unite Europe.
Well, I mean, that's a very German turn of phrase for you, yes, sir.
Well, that's everybody that goes out to conquer something. They're not trying to conquer; they're trying to unite under their banner.
Yeah, remember, most or really every great mass murderer in history thought they were doing the right thing. They all thought they were doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's not totally true. Mass murderer, yes. Serial killer, maybe not. I think that's where the line goes.
No, sometimes serial killers even make sometimes think that they're doing the right
sometimes
thing.
Sometimes they think they're doing the right thing.
They're doing God's work.
Other ones are like, a lot of them are like, we've covered them. We're like, I'm glad you caught me.
I was speaking more towards world leaders.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can guarantee you, Hitler thought he was doing the right thing.
Well, and a lot of those kids who go shoot up schools and shit think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, I'm really talking more on the government...
The world stage.
The government genocide thing.
The world stage, not the middle school.
They were all, like, you know, school shooters aren't trying to create utopia. Every one of these, like, lunatics like Hitler and Pol Pot and, you know, Lenin and Stalin, they were all trying to create utopia. And they all used the gotta break a few eggs excuse, you know?
Yeah, a few million eggs.
Yeah.
Yep. So near the it does help with population control. So near the end of the decade, in 1808, he composed what is probably his best known piece, if the Moonlight Sonata isn't good enough for you, his Fifth Symphony. The opening notes of this composition are known the world over and have become instantly recognizable, even to those who are not classical music fans. He would follow that up with another incredibly well known piece, Für Elise, which is in a music box in every grandmother's home.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
it is. That's the way you hear it,
too. I was
glad
when I figured that one out.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Where do we always... Oh, fucking every grandma has a music box with Für Elise in it.
At least one.
Yeah. And Für Elise, for the record, another heartbreak.
Yeah, it's
clearly
like...
written for some girl.
Yeah.
Right? he also... released a trial of his first and only opera, Fidelio, which he would take back to the drawing board for decades after this. Like, he put it out, he's like, I don't fucking like it, they don't fucking like it, back to the drawing board. And he would kind of rework this piece until the end of his life. One opera.
Maybe I'm just having a blank here and being an idiot, but is German opera developed... At this point,
Mozart was the first one to do German opera.
Yeah, okay.
And Mozart, okay, he's a contemporary of Mozart.
I was being an idiot, so yeah. erase that.
I got to get you one time. That made me feel so good. Thank you.
Yeah, that's true.
I needed that like confidence boost. I can say words for about a minute now. So, and by 1809, his mental and physical health were declining, as was his appearance. So if you look at the progression pictures, you can see that he's definitely taken to drinking. He's definitely taken some, like, depression shit, and he's definitely taken away from the self-care. This is when the hair, crazy hair comes up.
Well, he's probably on Adderall.
Yeah, they called that laudanum.
Lithium, yeah.
Yeah.
Mercury. He's chugging mercury. That was a common thing.
Chugging mercury and fucking heroin, and essentially, yeah, this is the cures they got at this time.
Yeah, back then, Big Pharma was the smelting plant.
Beautifully done. This is when we start to see the crazy-haired madman look come out of him. His production was also waning. His fame had granted him access to the richest people around, and this would also become some of his downfall. So he's like hanging out with all the richy riches because he changed that one letter in his name, and he's a commissioned composer, and he's going a little.
Yeah, he's eccentric.
Yeah, that's kind. He's a recluse, but when he does go out, it's like to hoity-toity parties or to play in front of a bunch of people who can go.
Yeah, he's just one step away from living in the top floor of a hotel.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, he's just, it's not going great. So somewhere around 1811, he met a countess, and this is the best story I can find in this one. I have found different names on this one, but I'm going with Josephine, the Countess of Diem, who was also known as the Countess von Brunswick. But there's lots of his lost loves or that kind of shit are counted in this story. But this is the one I went with, and this is the Immortal Beloved story that was later turned into a movie that is... and he was deeply entranced by this woman. And they supposedly had a torrid love affair. Like, there's some writing that they did. But, I don't know if that actually happened.
Yeah, hard to picture.
Yeah, ultimately, they couldn't get married because she's a countess and he just merely changed one letter in his name. He's a different social caste.
Of course.
So they can't get married. This would finally be the brokenest hearts. He's done.
But countess, that's like the lowest level.
Yeah.
It's not like you're a duke or an earl or a duchess.
Baroness is...
Oh, yeah, baron is lower than count.
And a baronet is lower than baron.
That's not gender. That's not anything.
Well, that's how people were able to afford things, because that's how you can buy your way to nobility.
No, if you're baronet, that's like you get free cable or something. <That's just> like, you don't have tracts of land.
Middle shelf booze.
Yeah, middle shelf. Yeah.
So with the broken heart and all the mental health issues and God knows what they're trying to do to cure those and losing his hearing and his just all these things coming on, he became suicidal and then tragedy struck again. His younger brother died and he ended up in a years-long custody battle for his nephew during which... his sister-in-law and Beethoven would sling mud at each other. He eventually won custody over the boy, but never got along with the boy very well.
Yeah, but he's going to...
So he's suing
for custody. His brother has a child with a woman who's not related to him.
Correct.
And so brother dies. She takes care of her child. And he's like, no, I'm going to take him away from you? Like,
this is exactly...
What kind of move is that?
This is exactly what's going on.
That's, like, stupid.
It's not a very good plan.
Yeah, especially, like, if you're like a hard of hearing, cranky recluse guy without a wife, on what basis are you taking this child away?
Right?
Yeah, that's...
Even now, fathers have a hard time getting custody of children, even when mom is bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah, like in their...
This is an uncle.
Yeah.
In a totally... Like, they're still back in Bonn. He's in Vienna.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Not a great plan. And then he gets the kid, and they don't get on. Yeah, he's probably because, I mean, we know where he learned to parent. But, I mean, that's also where his brother learned to parent. Probably wasn't that big a change, right?
He just didn't like the mom, I think. I think this was just vengeance at some mom he didn't like.
They definitely did not like each other.
Yeah.
I really underspoke when I said mudslinging. Like, it was in the papers they were trying to defile each other's reputations for years during this custody battle.
Sounds like Britney Spears.
Yeah. It was Free Britney kind of news. It was that big a deal. So, all of this essentially stopped his composing because, you know, custody battle and gotta sling some mud and shit.
Well, Vaughn goes out the window when you gotta get into a white trash trailer park fight.
Right. You get your A back.
Don't make me pull out the A. Don't make me go back to my roots.
They're in Bonn. Das Trailer Park-ish.
So, add all that to the fact that he's now nearly deaf, and the depression, and the poor relationship and broken hearts, and poor relationship with his nephew, and Beethoven would attempt suicide somewhere around 1820. He actually tried to kill himself. Clearly didn't, because, you know, it's death by suicide or it's attempt. When that didn't pan out, he returned to teach his nephew Carl how to be the musical great that he had become.
Well, if in doubt, go back to what you know. Beat the prodigy right into him.
How did he try to attempt suicide?
What John just said. I didn't find out how he tried to commit suicide. I'm guessing too much laudanum.
I just wonder, you know, back then they're dealing with...
They don't have razor blades. Bowie knife your arm.
They're dealing with, muzzle-loading things.
They had straight razors?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess they did.
But, they had, muzzle-loaders and stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes it very different. Death, offing yourself with a gun back then is really hard.
It's kind of tough,
takes a long time.
Ask Meriwether Lewis.
But, it's fair. Shooting a big, huge ball, if you... I think your success rate might be higher.
Maybe, but the velocity of that ball is lower, so it might just bounce around in your skull, which then makes your success rate higher because it shreds your entire brain. You go for permanent.
Yeah, because
the guys who try and kill themselves with something that shoots straight through their head, and now they're still fine and can do math or something.
Yeah, all you really lose with the muzzleloader thing is range and accuracy and that kind of thing. But in terms of the force delivered, if it's right at your head, it's gonna be pretty close to a modern pistol. So I would, at least as far as suicide needs are concerned,
I would. It was definitely not gun.
Yeah,
Hanging's always been popular too.
Hanging has been popular, it's an easy way to fail.
Yeah, you know, really.
You don't test the weight. This is a dark path. We are dark.
Okay, next.
We need those aluminum rings that haven't been bent. That's what you need there. If you think about hanging yourself, it's pretty rough. You gotta first of all have the architecture involved, like a good tree or a high ceiling.
Make sure that you've got a really nice closet rack,
exposed
or some
beams
shit.
Or something like that. Yeah, then you gotta know how to tie a knot,
and that falls apart for most folks.
That's gonna be rough. Then you have to have some good rope. You know, I mean, there's a lot of steps involved.
Well, then you gotta make sure you don't actually chicken out halfway through and pull yourself up.
Just funny.
So,
if you're doing the church organ, you got a tall building right there.
Why don't you just jump? Just jump.
Just jump. You got
you got options.
You're in the church. If you want to do it.
Go to the bell tower, for God's sake.
Yeah. It seems like you actually are in a prime position there. Not a lot of big office buildings around, but that church, though.
Which is why did we have the Hunchback of Notre Dame? Because, seriously, you're up there. Handle it.
Well, he had hearing problems, too.
He did.
Yeah. But he stuck it out.
Yeah, well, this guy tried not to, so he just turned to beating on his nephew that he had stolen from his sister-in-law. Legally stolen, mind you, but stolen from his sister-in-law. Because he's going to be a great parent. She had to be really awful if he won, right?
Yeah.
My kid's mother kind of level awful, awful.
Yeah, you gotta fuck up really bad.
Even drunker than him. So drunk she doesn't show up to court, maybe? How did that work? I don't know. That's a pretty big... Anyway,
So things did not go well with this tutoring situation, as you can imagine, but Beethoven returned to composing. So that's kind of a good thing. And take some time off from beating his nephew and go to... There's no proof that he beat his nephew. Allegedly beat his nephew, folks. But,
well, this is
I mean,
Carl,
come
right?
on. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Carl tried suicide, too.
Yeah, Carl wasn't a happy kid, either.
1826, Carl tries suicide. Fails! So they have failed suicide attempts to share.
Within less than a decade.
Well, that could be the topic for some father-son bonding.
Uncle-son bonding.
Uncle-son bonding. Yeah.
Daddy-uncle.
Yeah, it's like... Well, how'd you screw up, kid? Couldn't tie a knot. How about you, uncle?
Didn't test the beams.
Jesus. It's like, it's really hard to light that fuse when you got the gun at your head. Yeah.
Actually,
the flint kept falling out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks like he actually tried with the gun because he used to comb his hair over his temple to hide the attempted suicide scar.
That is some... liberal gun use, if I've ever heard it in my life. If you can't even shoot yourself in your own head.
Well, if you got a scar that you can just do a comb over.
Well, that's what Don King did. I mean, the shotgun to the back of the head made the crazy hair thing.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm thinking he was using a Saturday Night Special or something.
Well, you got to balance them fuckers. They're like, they're heavy. Caliber.
Yeah, you know? I know. Yeah.
And all you got to do, you know, if you've got the wrong angle a little bit, that ball just goes right off the top. You know, right around the skull.
Oh, man.
Man, that'd be wild if you're sitting there and you got the gun to your head and you pull the trigger. Well, you can't really hear it because you're deaf already. And then you just, that ball goes rolling over and you see it like knock over a vase and you're just like, well, I guess I'm still alive.
Talk about feeling like a failure.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, shit. So, I mean, yeah, that's a thing. So, he did return to composing. Many believe Carl may have helped or been, at minimum, an inspiration in this third phase of Beethoven's career. So, post-suicide attempt, he goes to third
phase.
So now
they've had a bonding moment. They tried suicide. It didn't work for either of them.
Well, it's a lot of stylistic stuff. That's why people argue this. There's not much proof. But because his style changed so dramatically, they thought there must have been a more youthful influence. And, you know, the kid that he's beat Prodigy into now is around a lot. And so maybe that's some of the influence in the music style. Either way, whatever. His seclusion, hearing loss, and mental health struggles had turned him into a full-blown paranoid and angry person. He was noted as having tried to break a chair over the head of a prince, who was also a close friend and patron. So, if we go mad, patrons stay far away. But, yeah, like, break a chair. Tried to. Didn't work. So this is like...
So we got Courtney Love here.
or UFC. You know.
Yeah, but if you try it and it doesn't work, you're kind of closer to the Three Stooges.
Well, he's been an artist all his life. I can't imagine he has a lot of, like, arm strength.
Well, yeah. Plus, like, you know, your standard chairs around your prince's house, they're probably pretty heavy duty.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, and the people that are generally around the prince aren't going to take too kindly to you hitting him right. with a chair.
Yeah.
And these are the guys that do know how to use that musket
and,
that you failed horribly with.
And the prince is your buddy and a patron. Like, there's a lot wrong with this. I've got a lot of notes.
Yeah, this isn't like the standard WWF folding chair.
No, I don't think so.
I think probably oak.
Large carved oak. Yeah. Velvet seat. Yeah. Lots of rivets.
Tufted upholstery.
You'd love to have one, wouldn't you?
I have that fake one. It's a, you know, it's a club chair, but it looks like one. So what else did he do? Oh, he would also regularly attack his staff, his publishers, and even lash out at the public when he would find his way out of his house. So like he became walk down the street, somebody bumps into you, screaming fit guy. He had gone totally crackers. It may have been all the whatever they're using to treat his mental illness. It may have just been the mental illness. It could have been a combination of all this.
Well, it could have just been an asshole.
He could have just been an asshole who had made a living almost his entire life for fucking around and writing music, right?
Yeah.
It's a trend. It's there's
go with what you know.
Yeah. Not to mention, I mean,
it seems like it's worked for him.
Dad never taught him any fucking manners. He has a fifth grade education.
Well, he knows how to hit people.
He does know how to whack people.
Well, not with chairs, apparently. I don't know.
He would compose his final symphony, the Ninth, in 1824. This would give us another piece of musical history. Ode to Joy is from the Ninth. And if you don't know, you do know, I promise you. It's a four-part vocal harmony using the words of Friedrich Schiller's poem. So this is returning back to that kind of fugue thing a little bit with that four-part harmony deal. And the way Ode to Joy is frequently sung is in that kind of a frame, which is interesting. Like, not as progressive as he thought. Although he would create a few more pieces, this was his last great achievement. It was his last symphony. He did write a couple more songs after this. March 26th, 1827. Beethoven died of cirrhosis of the liver, brought on by hepatitis.
Ugh.
Ugh.
Doesn't sound fun, but very common. Very, very common.
Well, I think it's a shitty water disease kind of thing.
Shitty water and heavy alcoholism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you got a really
probably
big
probably all the homemade cures.
Well, yeah, you're drink some more mercury again. Yeah. Again, allegedly, I didn't find any, but seriously, think about the time. This is probably. His autopsy gave us clues to where his deafness came from, indicating that he had contracted typhus, and that was the beginning.
Ugh.
It may not have been blows to head. They also didn't know about CTE back then, so like it could have been blows to head and typhus when he was younger, but typhus will make tinnitus kick in. The observation also showed high levels of mercury in his blood, which would have pushed him further into his mental health decline. So all this argument of allegedly comes out in his autopsy. Yeah. Like, dude, look at the bubble of metal.
Seriously? Well, why is his blood silver?
He was living alone in a recluse. You know, he just could have been eating a lot of tuna fish.
Him and his 19 cats.
Yeah.
You just open 20 cans of tuna and that's dinner for everybody for night?
Well, you notice he doesn't publish any cookbooks. I'm thinking he was tuna fish sandwich guy.
He did have servants. Remember, he would lash out at them and chase them around and stuff, so.
Probably wound up making his own dinner. Tuna fish sandwich.
You know, when you treat the staff like shit, you tend to not trust their cooking.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where he was getting all the mercury.
What I'm thinking is maybe the staff was putting the mercury in the food. You're like, would you fucking die already?
What do you think we can get this batshit crazy fucker to do next?
And there was definitely notes made about his alcoholism with the cirrhosis and all that kind of shit. In a will written a few weeks before his death, he left everything to...
His nephew?
Yep, to Carl. Who, you've never heard of Carl Beethoven, have you? Van. It doesn't matter, but like until reading... that he's Beethoven's nephew, you don't know about him, right?
No.
Clearly was not able to beat the prodigy into this kid.
Yeah, so he's not like, you know, Carl Bach. Or, you know, he kind of took up and made a living off of it.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm not. I mean, like, Carl Bach, like, Bach's son.
I did not know. That's why I asked if you were shitting me. And then you said yes, and... in the same deadpan voice, so I fucking believed you both times.
You've never heard of, like, C.P.E. Bach? Carl Philipp Emanuel?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He wrote some good tunes. He was no slouch.
I couldn't speak to that. Probably did.
No, he did. It's not like he probably did. He did.
You know who I really like?
Is me?
P.D.Q. Bach.
Oh, okay, back to the...
Now how old are we?
Now we're back to the trailer park again.
Now how old are
we?
All right, so, I don't know. It seems like this guy had a fucked up upbringing and pulled that into the rest of his life. He is one of the most recognizable composers of all time in any genre. I don't care what you answer for. You will recognize a bunch of his pieces before you recognize a song off of Nevermind. So he's just that good, and he does deserve that prominence and that understanding. It does also sound like he was kind of a dick and may have benefited from some mental health treatment
throughout his life that wasn't Mercury or whatever. But, I mean, he didn't mass murder anybody, I guess. He just wrote songs about mass murderers. That's all I got.
Okay, here's a shocker.
That petered right the fuck out.
That left kind of limp.
Shocker. Some musical prodigy has issues. They become very proliferate. They do all of their things. They have problems. They attempt suicide. Sometimes they succeed. Sometimes they don't. Well, guess what? Then they do more, and then they die of some alcohol-related thing. Let's see here. Are we talking about last week, or are we talking about 200 years ago?
Yeah, okay. Right. Fair.
This is not an uncommon story. There's nothing new about any of this. It's just the way it is. You know, it's one of those sad, tragic things that sometimes brilliance comes with a cost, and that's what the cost was this time.
Yeah, I don't know. Not a big fan. Never really was. It's like that. I think the whole classical period is, you know, marked by music that gets really loud, then really quiet, and then really loud. It's music for crazy people by crazy people.
This sounds like something that friends do.
Well, I thought we were friends.
I'm extremely uncomfortable with that.
I know. Let me give you a hug.
Thank you.